So my fear when I come to speak to you is that I've heard the word wrong. I can tell you I've not heard the word wrong because you've heard the word already this morning. And I think my job is just going to be to actually just pull the threads together and maybe just challenge us a bit deeper. But God has spoken already and God is speaking. I always, my worst bits about these talks, the beginning bit because I'm a little bit shaky, a bit nervous, and the end bit because I'm like, where do I wrap it up? So for the beginning bit this morning, I thought I'd just have a bit of fun with you, if that's okay. You might not know this about me, but before I became Mrs. Bell, the wife of the amazing Mr. Bell, and the daughter-in-law of the wonderful Mrs. Bell over there, my name was Siobhan Forsyth. I was a Forsyth. So I've got, like, kind of game shows in my blood. And so we're going to do like a kind of little game showy type thing this morning. Okay, I've titled my talk A Word for the Weary. What do you do when you're really, really tired? Or what are you supposed to do when you're really, really tired? Rest and sleep. And so we're going to have a little bit of a quiz here about sleep. I want to introduce you to Night Monkey. How cute is Night Monkey? Night Monkey sleeps for an average time of 17 hours. Okay, this is the game. I'm going to show you another animal higher or lower in the sleep stakes. Are we ready? Squirrel, higher or lower?
Lower.
Lower, lower. Oh, you're good. 14.9 hours. Okay. North American opossum, higher or lower than 14.9 hours?
Lower
over here, but higher over here. In this case, don't listen to the pastor. Higher, 18 hours. Okay, giant armadillo, higher or lower? Higher, a little bit lower. Really, don't listen to the pastor. 18.1 hours. Okay, now this one, I'm not sure I believe this one, but here we go. Human infant, higher or lower than 18.1 hours? Exactly. Lower. Apparently 16 hours.
No,
I'm not believing that one either. Right, so human infant, 16 hours. Okay. Tiger, higher or lower? Dave says higher.
Lower.
Nick, 15.8 hours is the tiger. Python, higher or lower than 15.8? 18 hours. Decent, okay. Koala. Higher or lower? Higher. Beck says higher. Beck knows because she's met koalas. She's right. 22 hours. I want to be koala. 22 hours of sleep. So the answer would seem to be, apparently, that we should channel koala and sleep plots to address our weariness. It's not actually true at all. Sleep is not the answer. I'm hopefully going to help you maybe discover a little bit about the answer to our weariness. And just so I know who my target audience here is today, please just put your hand up if you have actually ever felt weary. Good, 100% target audience, brilliant. Then open your ears because here we go. Right, we're in the book of Isaiah, and this is the last in our series of the songs of the seven songs. We're in Isaiah chapter 50, and I'm going to be looking at verses 4 to 9 of that book. The book of Isaiah, we've heard about it already. It's a book that's written against this backdrop of conflict and war and suffering and uncertainty. This nation that is divided, this nation that has turned away from the one who is constantly calling them back. Does that sound familiar? Aren't we in a time right now of conflict and division and of turning our back again and again away from the one who keeps calling us? Last week, David reminded us of who the serpent is here, and he used that amazing analogy. I love metaphors. This amazing kind of metaphor of the onion, and there's different layers, and that the servant is the prophet, and the servant is us. The servant is also Jesus, and we're going to be exploring those different layers today as we go through the passage. Now, the last time I spoke, I'm not going to take this personally, Lord, but the last time we spoke, my passage was on words. And it was on the power of your words. Well, here we go again. The Sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue, like no pressure again, thanks, to know the word that sustains the weary. He wakens me morning by morning. He wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. I'm not going to lie to you, it took me quite a while just to get past this verse. And I'm actually going to do a bit of a strange thing, because I'm going to save this verse until the end. So I'm going to keep you hanging. There you go, a little cliffhanger. We're going to come back to that one. I want to think for a moment about the second part of this. This idea of being woken morning by morning. I am not a morning person. I do not like being woken morning by morning. I hate my alarm clock going off. I will press that snooze button for as long as I can until I'm in the danger zone and it's going to be too late and nobody's going to be ready for school in time. But I hate being woken up in the morning. So God and I had a little bit of a wrestle over this little part of the verse. That little image there, that's now the lock screen on my phone. So my alarm is on my phone. And when my alarm goes off, that is what greets me. He wakens me morning by morning. And I can tell you that that has begun to transform my morning experiences. Because that verse doesn't say, I drag myself out of my bed and I blindly make myself a cup of tea and I sit down with my Bible and I read my Bible because I'm such a holy person and read my Bible in the morning makes me an even more holy person. It doesn't say that. It says, He wakens me morning by morning. It's not about my effort. It's not about me dragging myself out of bed. It's about Him waking me up because He's ready for me, because He's got a day ready for me and He wants me to be awake and to be part of it. I'm still not quite there. I don't quite have the spring in my step when I get out of bed, but I have got a bit of a bubble of excitement because the King of Kings has just woken me up because He wants to spend a bit of time with me. And so I do get up and I do sit with my Bible open, but it's not because I'm trying to prove myself to God or to Richie, who does his quiet time in bed. I'm a little bit jealous that he does that because isn't it so cozy in bed in the morning? I do it because I just love spending time with Him because He's woken me up to have this time with me. And in that time, what I'm starting to find is that it really does set the tone of my day. Starting my day with Him because He's woken me up, it just changes my perspective of the day. This verse also talks about listening. Okay, He wakens me morning by morning, and He wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. See, I used to turn up to my quiet time, and I used to turn up on a Sunday morning, and I was ready to receive, but I wasn't really listening, because it was about me and my effort. It was about me having lovely colour pens in my journal when I was having my quiet time, and it was about me sitting and looking really attentive during the sermon, but it really isn't about me. It's about the one who has things to say that I need to listen to. You see, I might turn up and my ears might be here, but I'm not necessarily using them. I'm not necessarily listening. And there's no point in God speaking to me if I'm not actually listening. How many times do you ever drift off when someone's speaking to you? You might be drifting off right now. If you are, back in the room, please. Back in the room. You know that like really awkward conversation that you have with someone? I do this far too often. When you're really desperately trying to listen, but you can't help it. Your mind just drifts. And then you drift back in and you go, yeah. And you can tell like by their reaction it wasn't an appropriate point to laugh in the conversation because they've just told you something really, really serious. I do that far too often because I'm there and my ears are there. But I'm not really listening. And we need to make a really conscious effort not to drift away when He's speaking. Because if we're wandering away, we might just miss the wonder of what He has to say to us in that moment. So maybe some of us need to let Him wake us up because we've made the effort all about us when really it's about surrendering to Him and letting Him do that job. And maybe some of us need to stop drifting. And we just need to fix our ears and our eyes on Him. And maybe some of us need to stop listening to ourselves and to the voices that we think are more important and to the rubbish around us and start listening to His voice. Maybe some of us need to think about taking away those filters of offence, that somebody has wronged us and stop us from hearing what God has to say. I'm going to explain this, what I mean by these filters of offence. If you weren't here the last time I spoke, it's not a test, I don't remember if I did, but I shared a story about the seven-year-old me who was offended by the seven-year-old Lee Branscombe because he noticed I was a little bit hairier and called me gorilla. Well, I'm 38 and I still carry that offence with me to the point where this happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was just walking down the corridor. I'm a teacher, by the way, if you don't know me, I teach English to boys. I love it. But I'm walking down the corridor in school, and I walked past a group of my Year 11s who I thought I had a really good relationship with. I thought that I kind of nailed this group. But I walk past them, and they start calling me gorilla. So I just carried on walking, and I got really, really hurt, and I got really upset, because I thought that me and this class, we kind of got on and it was okay. So the next lesson that I had them, oh, I was not going to let them get away with that. So I was strict, Mrs. Bell, in that lesson. I gave them nothing, gave them no leeway in that lesson. And they could sense that there was something up with me. So they asked me, Miss, what's up with you today? Because they're like quite open with me, my year 11s. So then I went into this really big lecture about bullying and how bullies pick on people's vulnerabilities and they make fun of them, and that is not right, and that doesn't make you a man by picking up on people's vulnerabilities. And one of them was like, Miss, I'm really sorry, because they were a little bit scared at this point, I'm really sorry, but really, what are you going on about? So I thought, Joe, I'm just going to tell them. So I told them what they'd upset me with, and I was like, it's just, I don't like it, I think you calling me names, I think it's out of order, and you actually really upset me. And they actually started laughing, which, have you ever had that anger that, like, boils? My anger was boiling, and I was about to explain, oh, I don't shout in the classroom, but I nearly shouted, so I'm, like, bubbling, and they're laughing at me. And they're like, Miss, that is not what happened on that day. They had just come out of biology. They'd been having a discussion about evolution, and they on the corridor were discussing how it could be possible that human and gorilla were related. But you see, I'd walked past them with my little offence that I've carried around me since I was 7 years old, and I made it about me, and I made that offence about me, and I just immediately jumped to the conclusion that they were talking about me and offending me. It was nothing to do with me, but I heard it the way I wanted to hear it, because I've been carrying this offence around with me for so long. Don't we do that sometimes? Don't we carry our hurts? And don't we carry those things that people have offended us with? And then doesn't that make us hear things in the way that we think that they should be heard? Well, we miss the truth when we do that. And we need to surrender that offence. Because if we walk around with those filters of offence, we are not going to hear what he's saying. I'm over it now, by the way. I'm there over it now. And we're back to, like, a lovely relationship. But that way I'm cracking the whip because the exams are coming. But anyway, our filters of offence can stop us from hearing. Another thing that can stop us from hearing is our rebellious little heart. Because you hear, we might hear it. We might put those filters down and we might be open and surrendered, and he speaks and we hear it. But then maybe we turn away. The sovereign Lord has opened my ears. And the servant says, I have not been rebellious. I have not turned away. Because sometimes, isn't our instinct, when we hear that thing that we know he is saying and we know that he is challenging us with, isn't our instinct to turn away, to rebel? I don't want to hear that. I don't want to be obedient to you. Here's another thing that you might not know about me. Some of you do, those of you that know me well. I am an introvert. This is terrifying to an introvert, because there are lots of you here and you are all looking at me, and actually what I'd rather be doing right now is running through the door and running out that door and running to my car, but I'm not. I'm here with you doing the thing that the introvert doesn't do. It's okay, because I've got my red shoes on. I got the seal of approval from Hope this morning, by the way. The outfit was okay. That made me feel okay. I've got my red shoes on and I've got my lipstick on. And you might think I'm standing here and I'm kind of confident and, you know, I've got my lanyard on, it's all good. I am terrified. But I also know that God has given me a thing to do. And if I rebel and if I turn away, never mind you getting to hear me speak, I don't get to do this. And bizarrely, in a weird, twisted way, I kind of love this. This fulfills me. And sometimes the thing that he's saying that we instantly rebel and turn away from, because that's not me, I don't do that, that's the very thing that's going to fulfill you. That's the very thing that he's going to surprise you with. I am not an introvert. It's part of my personality, something that describes me, but it's not who I am. I'm Siobhan Bell. I get to do things like this. You are not anxiety. You might have anxiety. That's not who you are. And you are not depression. You might have depression. That's not your name. You are not broken. You might have brokenness, but that's not your name. We sometimes let those things that maybe our description of a tiny part of us dominate our whole identity. That's not who we are. I am Siobhan Bell, and I am a child of God, and that will do for me. It's the same for you. So those little things that maybe kick that instinct in to make us rebel and turn away, don't let them become your identity. Child of God, that's who you are. The servant in this passage here, he knew what his purpose was, and he didn't rebel, and he didn't turn away from it. It says here, sorry, this is like works really quickly. Thanks, Rich. By the way, an aside, because I can't, because I'm married to him, but he's amazing. He's amazing. He, all this stuff, it looks really easy, but it's not. He's amazing, even though he does wear Crocs with socks. Anyway, this is another thing about me when I'm nervous, I say things out loud, I should stay in here. Sorry, Rich. Anyway, moving on to the servant. The servant knew what his purpose was, and he says it here. I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting. Who chooses that? Who chooses to offer their back to be beaten? Who chooses to offer, I don't know what that's like, their beard to be pulled? I imagine it's painful. Johnny says it's painful. Who offers their face to be spat upon, to be mocked at? He did. He did. Because he loves us. He didn't rebel. He did it because he loves us. How did he do it? Because he knew this. The sovereign Lord helps me. I will not be disgraced. Therefore, I've set my face like flint, and I know that I will not be put to shame. He who vindicates me is near. Who then will bring charges against me? Let us face each other. Who is my accuser? Let him confront me. It is the sovereign Lord who helps me. Who will condemn me? They will all wear out like a garment. The moths will eat them up. Who chooses that sort of obedience? The one who knows who is on his side. Four times in this passage, the servant refers to the sovereign Lord, the Hebrew Jehovah Adonai. Adonai means this, it means Lord and Master. Goes beyond just the name of God. It describes the relationship that we have in him. And I have to say that in my preparation, the rebellious, independent little woman in me kicked against that a little bit. I'm not anyone's servant. I've been freed. My chains are gone. But there's something different about this relationship with this Lord and Master. See, when I think about ownership, I think about it in a world kind of way. And when we think about ownership in a world kind of way, we think about the powerful and the powerless. And we think about those who have authority and those who then have to submit in weak submission. But that's not what it's like with God. Because you see, whether we like it or not, whether I like it or not, I am always owned by somebody or something. I'm owned by society and what society says I need to be. I'm owned by my job and the demands of my job. I'm owned by my stuff and the amount of stuff that I need to have. I'm owned by my fears and by my securities. I'm owned by the relationships that I forge. These are the things that have sovereignty over me. They rule me. They own me. And it is that kind of world relationship, that world idea of power, because they're powerful and I'm powerless to their sovereignty. Well, God longs to free us from that sort of ownership, and he longs to free us from that sort of sovereignty. He longs to redeem us. That word redeem, it's a funny word, isn't it? It always makes me think of that that camp classic. I'm not going to sing it now, but I've been redeemed. That one. Yes, Susie, little joke right there. That song, I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I've been redeemed. I'm stopping now anyway, stopping. But that song, it actually has really powerful words because it talks about what it means to be redeemed. To be redeemed, it means that you have been bought back. Those things had sovereignty over me, but he redeemed me from them. He bought me back. That's what it means to be redeemed. It means that I was already owned, and he chose to buy me back. And he bought me back with the blood of his son. And so then all of a sudden, that description of God as Lord, Sovereign, Jehovah, Adonai, doesn't seem so cold and distant. Seems like the most loving sovereignty in the world. Because he redeemed me so that I could actually be me. This isn't a plug for be me, but it is coming up. But he redeemed me so that I could be myself. So that I could actually be free to be all those things that he originally intended for me to be. And as long as I submit to the altar of the world, and as long as I submit to the sovereignty of all that stuff, I will never be truly satisfied. I will never be full. But when I submit to his sovereignty, when I make that the relationship, that's what fulfills me. In this passage, every time the Sovereign Lord is described, it's followed by these sorts of words. So in verse 4, the Sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue. Verse 5, the Sovereign Lord has opened my ears. Verse 7, the Sovereign Lord helps me. It is the Sovereign Lord who helps me. This isn't the sort of sovereignty that oppresses us. This is the sort of sovereignty that gives and opens and helps. And sometimes we can be a little bit stubborn in our submission to God because we think we're going to lose something of ourselves. We kind of think that's what submission means. But here's what I am learning. I am never more fully myself than when I am completely lost in worship to him. I am never more liberated than when I am fully in his presence. I am never more purposed than when I allow him to have full reign in my life and get me to do crazy things like speak to you. That's what his sovereignty is. He is good to me. He is my liberator, not my oppressor. That's what his sovereignty is. He sets me free. He pays my debts. He isn't my creditor. He doesn't demand back from me. He chooses freedom for me. So his sovereignty doesn't just completely reform our identity. It brings with it all of the resources of heaven. And here's where I know that God had his hand on my word. Because Julia shared a word with us about our scorecards and how we make ourselves the judge. While this passage is full of this kind of legal language, uses words like vindication and charges and accusations and condemnation. And it's as if we've moved into the courtroom in the passage. So the servant stands there in the courtroom and he has all these fingers, all these accusers pointing at him. The ones that questioned him when he was on earth, the ones that tried to disgrace him, the ones that spat on him, the ones that beat him, the ones that sent him to the cross. But the servant knew that none of those accusations could stand against the Sovereign Lord. And he knew where the Sovereign Lord was, right by his side. So who can accuse you? Nobody. Because you have the Sovereign Lord right on your side. Who can keep score against you? Nobody, because you have the Sovereign Lord right on your side. If our God is for us, then who can be against us? Nobody, because the Sovereign Lord is on our side. So when you stand in that courtroom and when you feel like the fingers are pointing at you, nobody can accuse you because you have the Sovereign Lord on your side. Sometimes we kind of think that it's God that's doing the accusing. But if you've got him, if he is your Sovereign Lord, how can he accuse himself? He can't. The sovereign Lord is on your side. There is no scorecard with him. Here's another thing that I'm learning. I am weaker when I'm on my own. When I think I don't need the sovereign Lord, when I push him over there, because I'm all right, I can do this myself. Here's what I'm learning, that self-help is no help at all. I need the sovereign Lord on my side. See, when I try to ignore and suppress my problems, because the world doesn't want to see that in me, that's a bit messy, that's a little bit embarrassing. And when I get myself in a situation where I feel like, do you know, that person has wronged me, but I don't want to speak up because I don't like conflict and I don't want to be the one that causes the trouble. And when I'm feeling a bit ashamed about something, but I feel like I need to bury that thing because the world doesn't need to know that about me. And when you've hurt me, or you've let me down, or you've offended me, but rather than tell you and resolve it, I think I need to keep that hidden away because that's more dignified. I am not helping myself because self-help is no help at all. And here's the thing for us. The church needs to be better than that. We need to be a place of honesty and openness. We need to be a place where our shame can be brought into the light because that's the only way it's going to be healed. We need to be a place where we do not carry around filters of offence against each other because the world needs to see a place that is safe, that is going to comfort them, that is going to offer them protection. And if we want to bring people in, because we know that people need the love of the Lord, if we want to bring them into this place, then we need to model that. And so if you're walking around with that chip on your shoulder or that filter of offence, then you need to do something about it. But it's not about your self-help. It's about surrendering it to God. We do this with God, and we do this through Jesus, and we cannot do this on our own. So here's where I want to bring it back to the beginning. Right at the beginning, we had that verse, didn't we? The sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. And that has been my prayer constantly in my preparation, that he would give me the word that sustains the weary, that I would have the tongue of the disciple who listens and who responds. I feel your weariness. I understand your weariness. You who come here weary because you're just really lonely and you're constantly working hard to build those relationships, but it's exhausting you. I know your weariness, you who come with the weight of the things that you are carrying that you were never supposed to carry. I know your weariness, you who come here and you're tired because here we go again. It's the same old, and that fire went a long time ago and I'm just stuck in this lukewarm place of going through the same old things again. I know your weariness, you who come here with your unanswered prayers and your disappointments because you kept bringing it to him and you haven't seen the answer yet. I know your weariness, you who keeps picking at that wound instead of letting it heal. I know your weariness, you who thinks that life is just too busy and where is the time to be a koala? There is no time for that. I know your weariness, you who has that constant daily battle with your heart and your head that you don't want the world to know about. I know your weariness, you with your insecurities that actually are so heavy to carry. I know your weariness, you who are carrying the consequences of somebody else's actions that were never meant for you to carry. I feel your weariness. I know it, but I'm not the only one that knows it. He knows it. Sovereign Lord knows it. So go with me on this. Here's what I think God would say, and he's said it already, that self-help is no help at all. You need to open it to him. A long time ago, somebody gave me this verse in Proverbs 4:23 and said this, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." And they told me that God had given this verse to them to give to me. So I took that verse and I cherished that verse and I took it really seriously. I did that thing that Pete talked about before. I guarded my heart. I built up defences. I shut the gate. I wrapped it in cotton wool. Because isn't that how you guard your heart? Isn't that how you guard it? Keep it really, really safe. I wouldn't let my heart go anywhere dangerous. I wouldn't let anybody in to my heart, because isn't that what you're supposed to do when you guard your heart? The thing was, because I was guarding it, I was stopping anything from getting in, and I was stopping anything from getting out. I made it all about me. It was my heart, and it was my job to guard it and to defend it. But I hadn't really considered Philippians 4, chapter 7. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It was my job. It was my heart. It was his. See, guarding my heart has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with surrender. Guarding my heart is nothing to do with my constant vigilance, but everything to do with letting him watch over me. Guarding my heart wasn't even about my heart, because it wasn't my heart in the first place. And that was a really hard lesson for me to learn, and I feel like I'm still learning. I'm not completely there with that complete openness and surrender, but I have taken down a few of the barriers. And I have taken the cotton wool off. And I do let it do some dangerous things sometimes. So what C.S. Lewis says, there are no real personalities anywhere else until you have given yourself to him. You will not have a real self. That's where we find our identity. That's where we find everything, in that true surrender of self. Now, I'm going to do a weird thing, but I feel like it's helpful, and I need to put the microphone down. I'll do it. It's all right. I'll do it one-handed. No, because that'll look weird if you were holding my mic. I'll just do it one-handed. It's fine. Here we go. And I felt like this is how God was helping me understand this. So when I lift my hands, so just imagine this is me surrendering to God. When I lift my hands like that, I'm completely open. Okay, there's openness there, there's space. When I reach out to you, when I reach my hands out to you, there's openness there. When I make it about me, when I point it back at me, I close it all off and I guard it and I can't surrender it because I've put the barrier back up, because self-help is no help at all. Acknowledge your weariness, it's fine. Don't ignore it. Don't suppress it. Guarantee that when you have that openness and when you surrender it to him, it will shift. It doesn't say in that verse that he will stop your weariness. It says he will sustain you in your weariness. He will keep you going in it. So allow yourself to be fully redeemed. Not kind of discount price, but fully redeemed, fully bought back. Because you will never be more alive or more purposed than when you allow yourself to be fully redeemed. See, we weren't created to be these little self-contained vessels of redemption. I'm redeemed and I'm going to keep it to myself. We were created to give that out, to be an open people. It's really important that we understand that. I experience my greatest joy, freakishly, as the introvert, when I speak to you and when I have conversations with you over coffee out there. That's the thing that I want to rebel and run away from. But I've allowed him to redeem that in me. And that's where I feel my fullest joy. I feel alive when I worship God and I focus on him instead of focusing on me and what I look like when I'm worshipping. What I look like in my everyday and work when I'm worshipping. If I stop making it about me and making it about him, that's what brings me life. I feel more purposed when I actually love other people. It's become really easy to show your love to other people, hasn't it, by sending the praying hands. It's really easy to do that. But when I actually love you with my real words, and when I show you my love with my real actions, that's when I feel purposed. That's when I feel alive. So here's where I want to leave this. Open your ears. Give him your filters of offence. Take down your barriers. Give him your weariness. Don't be afraid of facing the accuser, because the Sovereign Lord stands right next to you. Turn around and face that thing. It is not about you. It is all about him. So what is God saying to you this morning? And what are you going to do about it?